You'll see in the top of this slide, I've said science because that's the way that government sees it. They don't talk about physics education particularly, they talk about science education. And the UK is in brackets because we're starting to move something, I guess, a bit more like Canada, where Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland and England are all doing different things. Primarily, I'm going to be talking about England because it is far the biggest. This table is an attempt to summarise kind of the state of physics in the UK in some ways. So you can see that we've got the ages going on the left-hand column, and up until the age of 14, all students are taught science. Until the age of 11, they'll be in a primary school, and they'll be taught science along with every other subject by one teacher, generally speaking. At 14, they'll move to secondary school, and they'll probably have a specialist teacher, but as you'll see, they probably won't have a physics teacher. 14, 16, we start doing GCSEs, and from this September, we're starting to do a completely new set of GCSEs, which are going to emphasise very different aspects of science. And then 16 to 18, we have physics A levels. You can see the numbers. We tend to get very pessimistic about physics in the UK. And the real reason for that is the bottom row, where we're talking about 28,000 who leave school at 18 doing physics. But actually, up until the age of 16, we've got a lot of people studying physics. But the big drop is at 16. The other thing, the final column is really there to show, and I think this is different to your situation, we have a lot of testing. These national tests are set by the government, and they're about schools. They're not about the children. They're about telling us how well schools are doing. And the problem with them is that schools are now starting to practice this. So the kids are being assessed continually from 5 up until the age of 16, and they're being drilled through these tests, by and large. Okay. Is there anything I need to say there? Perhaps one thing to note is that 14 to 16, most children, by far the majority of children, will be doing science. They'll be doing two GCSEs worth of science. That's about 20% of curriculum time is spent doing science, and roughly speaking, a third of that is physics. You can see the problem here is actually quite an interesting one, because if you look at the number of boys doing physics, we don't have that big a problem. It's the sixth most popular A level. You'll do about 3 or 4 A levels in the UK. But if you look at it for girls, it's the 19th most popular, and I struggle to think of 18 subjects, frankly. So you can see it's a problem. And this is what kids will tell you about why they don't like doing physics in the UK. Roughly speaking, it'd be a bit more sophisticated than this, but I guess some of this will ring some bells with you. It is seen as difficult, and there's some research evidence to back it up. But in fact, the most common grade at A level is grade A for students who take A level physics. It's irrelevant. We're never quite sure what that actually means when students say it doesn't mean anything to me, because you can get kids excited by things like the cosmos, which in theory aren't relevant in the way that mobile phones are relevant, which is what they quite often seem to mean. But the most common one is probably one that you encounter: physics is boring. But why is that the case? Well, we believe the case is because there aren't very many physics teachers in our schools. If you look at the top set of figures, this is about people training to be science teachers, and this comes back to the original thing. We don't have people training to be physics teachers or chemistry teachers or biology teachers. They train to teach science. So you'd expect to have, roughly speaking, a third of each. And what we end up with is about 15% of trainee science teachers are actually physicists. That's they've done physics at university in some form or other. So you can see we've got a problem. It's a problem that's got worse, because if you look at the number of teachers in schools now, we've got 19%, roughly speaking, of a physics background. One other thing to notice is that in some areas it's much worse than others. In 11 to 16 schools, those are the schools that would finish at GCSE, they don't teach A-level physics, there will be, in 26% of them, there will be no one with a physics degree. So the physics up until the age of 16 is being taught by people who don't have any background in physics. So what are we trying to do about it? By and large, and this makes us different to some of the other organisations in the UK, we see as teachers being the key. But because we have lots of schools out there that aren't really, that don't have physicists in them, we try and do this through individual schools more than individual teachers. And that's a kind of list of the things that we do. And I'm not going to talk through them because I don't want to take up too much of Gary's time, as it were, but I'm going to run through some things that I thought you might be a little bit interested in. In terms of professional development, we have a network, which is Gary's going to tell you much more about. We do courses very much like the thing you're doing here, really, three-day residential courses. So if you were ever over in England and you fancy coming along to one, they're very kind of highly rated, similar to this, input from physicists and input from people who know about education. And we have some email lists. And the first of those email lists, physics teacher news and comment, we actually have quite a lot of overseas teachers on it who are kind of comparing situation in Australia with the UK. and it might be something that you might find useful. I haven't put the URL up because it takes up loads of space, but if you just put PTNC into Google, you would find it. I mentioned that we have lots of science teachers, and where the effect of the science teachers is most pronounced is what's called our key stage 3, 11 to 14-year-olds. The chances are, if you've got an 11 to 14-year-old in school, they will not be being taught physics by a physicist, so we've done some support programs to try and help them, producing a series of 5 CD-ROMs which cover the main topics that you would be teaching, I guess, at your elementary school. And it covers chunks of the curriculum. You can see electricity, magnetism, force and motion. The other thing that we think is really important in terms of trying to persuade kids to do physics is practical physics. And one of the problems with having non-specialists in the classroom is that they're less likely to do practical work. And with, I think your introduction summed it up, we have an aging population in the UK, and there's a lot of craft knowledge about doing practical work, and we're trying to capture that through this website, Practical Physics, which has lots of activities about how to do practical work. And some of them I think you'd find useful, and we'd be really happy for you to contribute. The idea is that this is to build up the kind of everyone's knowledge about how to do practicals and how to make them work better. Okay, so it's something where you can maybe find some things you didn't know, but you can add to it as well. I mentioned girls in physics, and actually that's one of the reasons I'm here, because in the UK there are a number of people who think that Canada's solved the problem of getting girls to do physics, so I'm kind of keen to find out if that's really the case, and if so, how you've done it. The research that we've done says what you would probably expect, that the key is the teacher. If you've got a good physics teacher, then girls will do physics. If you haven't got a good physics teacher, they won't do physics, and that's the most important lesson that seems to come out of the research. We're starting to encourage more non-specialists to go into teaching physics, and they're struggling teaching at the higher level, so 16 to 18-year-olds, they're struggling with that slightly. So we've developed a fairly extensive website to give them ideas about how you might sequence different concepts and teach them activities that you might try out, questions you might try out on them, and things like that. And you can see all the different topics, and that's free. Sorry, I should have said all these things are free. We're just kind of putting them up on the website, and they're there for you to use. Advancing Physics is an A-level that we developed as an organization. It's an attempt to make our final kind of bit of physics in school much more contemporary and have some modern physics in it, and to give some students, to give teachers and students some choice about the physics that they actually do. You can see from the titles on the slide that it's perhaps looks slightly different to traditional physics courses. The physics is there, but it's put into context which make it seem more modern and contemporary. And it's in 2 parts. I haven't really explained ASNA2, but if you want to know more about it, I'm very happy to do that. And I'm going to hand over to Gary, who's going to do all the exciting stuff. Because he taught it. Sorry, he taught it.
Yes, but it wasn't my baby. I didn't come up with it. Advancing Physics is the course, one of the courses you can do in the UK for the 16 to 18-year-olds, and it's got a number of resources that I'd like to see. And there's two books. The books are slightly different than your normal textbook. They're meant to be read, so there's actually a sort of story. I don't mean that. I don't mean that. Then I don't mean sort of not looked at, but I mean they're actually meant to be read. It's got a story, narrative going through it that's explaining the idea. It's not just a sort of bang, bang, bang. These are the facts. And it's got questions and lots of nice diagrams and stuff like this. The content is quite. I was going to give these to somebody else. We're around for the rest of this, because you'll notice we're going really fast because we've got so much stuff to cover. But we're around for a couple of days if you want to talk to us. As well as the books, there's a CD that goes with each of the books. And it's rather innovative, like most of the course. The course contains quite a lot of modern physics, but not only modern physics, modern ways of teaching stuff. So there's some really nice ideas. So if you open the CD up, you come to the, you should see up the side over here, there's 7 chapters, no, 9 chapters, sorry, plus loads of other information. One of the faults with the CD is, if you hit the print button without checking the right boxes, it tries to print the entire contents of the CD. And there's 30,000 pages. Okay, so it's a lot of information. It's actually not until you've done that, you've made that mistake, you realise how much information is on it. So, if we look at one of these chapters, Okay. For any one of these chapters, you click the button, and then there's a teacher's guide. And the teacher's guide sort of gives you a rough idea of what you're supposed to be doing. You don't have to sort of stick to this, but if you're not so experienced, it's helpful. It tells you the aims, reasons, all this sort of stuff, what you're doing. Then there's a teaching plan. And the teaching plan has got, you know, the stuff in a bit more detail. And if you go, if you drop down through the teaching plan, okay, there's then activities. So now, if we go to the resource manager, okay, let's see. On the CD, there's activities, experiments, software-based stuff. There's display materials, which is mostly just pictures and things that you can use. That's just basically everything. There's a load of questions, and there's answers as well with all the workings through. And then there's readings. Now, the kids have got their own version of this, which is pretty similar but not quite the same. It has got the answers on. It just hasn't got some of the teaching notes stuff on. So if we went to an activity, a software-based activity, okay, this tells you what it is. What it is the kids are supposed to be doing, and then you can actually go. Where's it? Oh, I can't go. This is the only trouble when there's 30,000 pages of stuff. I should have clicked. Okay, and then it'll open this particular bit of software. This is an activity for the kids to do, so there's questions and they can change parameters and all this sort of stuff. And this is quite a powerful bit of modelling software. This is free. Okay, so you get this for the course. The kids can install it and you stick it on your network at school. And this particular one's got a nice little animation. So you start the animation and you see the little photon moving and doing its stuff. And you can build, you know, there's all sorts of animations that you can build with this, mechanics ones, quantum physics ones, et cetera, et cetera. So, there's like 2 years worth of all this information on the CDs, and I think it's sort of the joint most popular course in the UK for the 16 to 18 year olds. It's got about 20% of all students doing it. There's one other thing there's thousands of other things I should have told you. But the one that makes this actually quite useful is the software allows you to change what's on the screen. You can create something called a shadow file. And if you make a change to this, all that it saves is the changes. So I can cut out a bit I don't like, type my own text in, and then save that. And then that comes up. And I can send that to the kids as well, so that when they read it, they read what I want them to see, you know, not what was on here. And there's all other tools you can do. I mean, the software that this was created with is very powerful. Okay. So if you want to look at that in more detail, I've got my laptop with me. Then you'll be able to see it, and the books will be floating around as well. I do two things. I run the teacher network, and basically we've got quite a lot more than this now, but we've got teachers scattered all over the UK. And those teachers do inset and sessions and workshops for other teachers. And then when I'm not doing that, I'm doing this, which is I'm the editor of the Journal of Physics Education. Okay, hopefully you've got a copy in your pack of the journal. It is an international journal. And I'll do the sales pitch real quick. We have six issues a year. It's not full of worksheets. No, it's not that sort of journal. It's a sort of mix of physics education research and good ideas from the classroom. Now, the one problem we have with teachers overseas is If you want to buy this, sort of what they call a full rate subscription, it's about $450, which is probably beyond the keenness of most physics teachers. But for individual subscriptions, there's this $137 rate. But the problem is you won't see it advertised anywhere. So if you are interested, I've got some forms somewhere. But you need to know the $137 because they won't tell you. You'll have to tell them, okay, that that's how much you're going to pay. But that's it. That's the end of the advert. Okay. So the physics teacher network. Right. The aim of the network is to support physics teachers on or those teaching physics or involved in the teaching of physics at a sort of individual level. But that doesn't mean like the coordinators come around and do your marking for you. What it does mean is that we try not to do, we've already got other things in place that do things like sending stuff out via email. So the plan is that what we're doing as coordinators is we're meeting people sort of face to face, okay, so that we can have a chat and we can buy them a beer and all that sort of stuff. One of the things about network is we try not to make it too uniform, because different regions, even in places with a relatively small size like the UK, different regions have got different needs. For instance, Scotland is a very, very different sort of educational system than in England. So the Scottish coordinators sort of do their own thing. That's sort of how many we've got. We've got about 40 coordinators at the moment. It's probably not enough, but we have a problem in that if we have any more, then we'll have to start sort of, paying. Because basically, I manage everybody at the moment. If we start having more people, we'll need other layers of management, and that's a bit more than we're ready for right now. So what sort of things do we do? The coordinators run their own sessions. They're mostly experienced teachers, so they put their own sessions together. We also have some centrally resourced sessions. So basically, these are sessions somebody else has put together, and we've made them as accessible for other coordinators as possible. We send newsletters out to every school in the UK, pretty much, which are very brief summaries of what's going on in their area. They're just on one side of A4. Two sides of A4, because usually teachers haven't got time to read anything else. And then, we just, we do just physics stuff. And usually we don't say no. If the idea is that we're supposed to be doing stuff with teachers. Somebody wants to do stuff with kids, and it's usually, okay, as long as it's not going to cost too much. The sort of stuff that the coordinators do, their own sessions, there's visits, they do things, come to do sessions like this, they do twilight sessions after school for teachers, they do poster things with the kids, the list goes on and on and on. Okay. The centrally resourced sessions, we're still in the process of building up, but we've got one that I'm going to do now. Well, I'm sort of half going to do, I'm going to do it real quick. But you've got the CD, it's called Software for Skint Schools. We've got one called New Ideas, which I'll show you a little snippet of. Son of New Ideas, because basically we started off with everything in one big suitcase, but some of the coordinators couldn't lift the suitcase. So we split it into two suitcases, and the second one became Son of New Ideas. We have, there's something called the Gatsby Foundation, which is something set up by the Sainsbury family. They've got a lot of money, so they plough it into this project, SEP, Science Enhancement Project. They've produced resources. These are like boards with energy conversion stuff on it. And what we're doing is we're running their workshops for them. And in the process of doing those workshops, we show the teachers how to use the energy boards, and they get the energy board to take away with them, which is about $140 worth of kit. We don't charge them anything. We don't charge anybody anything for any of this. We've also got a similar workshop using thermochromic sheet. Again, it's the same thing. Like, the teachers come along, we show them what to do with it. They take it away with them. And then in the pipeline, we've got more stuff from SEP. We've got New Ideas Rides again, because we've got more things that we've, have come our way that we think are good fun. And then we've got one on the Van de Graaff generator that's called Shocked and Stunned, because we also, apart from, I mean, it's not just physics teachers, we're dealing with chemists and biologists who are teaching physics, and we found that they don't always feel happy teaching something, you know, using something really fun like the Van de Graaff generator. So we're going to, you know, make sure that they enjoy it and don't get too many shocks and don't shock the kids. Because we'd have, you might not have this thing, health and safety. Oh, you do? Okay. Yeah, so we have issues with health and safety. We try to avoid it as much as possible. Okay, so this is a very brief version of one of the workshops. The reason that we put this together was because in the UK, teachers were given what they called e-learning credits, which meant that they could buy software to use in their school. And of course, as soon as they did that, as soon as the government sort of said, here's some money to spend on software, then what happened was all of the companies said, hey, teachers have got money. And they started sending all these bits of paper through, advertising bits of software that, I mean, some are great, but others, they're just rubbish, and you know, you can get the same stuff for free on the web. So we basically put all of the free stuff onto a CD, and we show the teachers this in the workshop. The idea isn't necessarily that you know, they're going to go away and use the CDs and use the software that's on them. And certainly they're not going to go away and install all the different bits of software on the network, like data anyway. But they know what, now that they know what's available for free, they're a bit more difficult to please when they see the stuff that they're having to pay for. Because the people who are usually the people who do this stuff for free, they don't have a huge marketing budget. So you know, you don't get to hear about this stuff. Now, you've got the CD in the pack. I'm not going to show you what, so you have to have a look for yourself. But it's got all the software that we're just going to whiz through very quickly. Now, I'm guessing there's a fair chunk of this stuff that you will have already seen. So, you've all seen this, surely? Yes? Yeah? Okay, if you haven't seen it, it's a fantastic bit of software, free, from West Point, the military academy in the US. And it's, I mean, just absolutely fantastic. My little four-year-old, you know, has built bridges on this and loved it. Celestia. Hands up if you've seen Celestia. This is fun. This is so good. I'll get it now. I'll show you. Celestia is a bit of a 3D. It's like a 3D chunk of the universe. Okay, I run it down. And it's very, 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 very realistic. So all the stars are in the right places, all the planets are in the right places. I don't know why my computer's got a bug and it puts the clouds sort of stripy, unless it's a global warming thing, I don't know. You can switch all these labels on and off. It really is, you know, absolutely fantastic. You can sit and play with this for hours. I mean, you can just go in and you can do a double lesson and you just sit and play and the kids sit and watch in silence and it's just great. They don't learn anything, but it's great fun. So it's got all these different stars, and all the stars are the right spectral classification, and they've got things like sunspots on. If there's an extra solar planet that they've discovered around that star, then there's a sort of artist's impression of it. All the stars are in the right places where they're supposed to be. You can add all of these labels in, and it's just an absolutely fantastic bit of software. Now there are drawbacks with it. One is that people do stuff like they put a base on the moon. So you can download a little bit and you can have a base on the moon. The trouble with putting a base on the moon is once the kids have seen it on here, then it'll come up in answers in tests because they've seen it and it was so realistic that they don't date it. So you have to be very careful. You can't really get away with the space station in 2001, Space Odyssey, because that's a bit realistic. But you can get away with the Death Star. Right, Star Wars, because you can download that one as well. Okay, so what I tend to do with this, you'll see down in the corner, it's got the speed. Now, one of the non-realistic things about this is that it doesn't take relativity into account. So when you sort of go flying around the place, which you can do, you don't, you know, things don't start looking sort of red and blue. There's a load of educational stuff that you can download with this that's got like a Word document, and it's got links in, so it asks the kids questions, and then they click on the link, and when they click on the link, if they've got Celestia open, they go to that little spot in the universe where they're supposed to be looking at something. So you click on the link, and suddenly you're looking at a comet, and it's asking you questions about comets. There's just a whole, you know, shed load of stuff. Are we nearly finished? Oh yeah, it's a chunk of the Milky Way, so you can go out of the Milky Way and sort of have a look around and then zap back in, but you can't go off to the small Magellanic Cloud, you know, or the Large Magellanic, bit of a hindrance, you know, but if you fancy that for a holiday. But by and large, no, you just turn it upside down, so it's not a... I don't know. I've not looked on the website, but I mean, there's so much stuff that you can download. Somebody will have done a, you know, full. I mean, there's nothing missing from this. It's not like, you know, it's black below the horizon. You know, all the stars are there. Okay. Well, one of the things that I do with this is I try to get across to the kids the idea of the scale of the universe. So we'll speed up. Are we going home? No, going out. Yeah, so we press the button and we speed up. And you'd think that if you wanted to travel around the universe, going really fast would be a good idea. But actually the problem is that as soon as you've seen the place you want to go, it's gone past you because you're going that fast. So you sort of think, actually, it would actually be really difficult just to, you know, breaking it at, you know, 78 times the speed of light is a bit tough. And now hopefully we're going to go home. By home, it doesn't mean like your house, just the planet. Right, so there's the demo completed. If I press this A button, you'll see the speed over there in the corner. Maybe about half a kilometre a second. And you'll notice nothing much is happening. So if we speed up a bit more, okay, we're doing kilometres a second, and you'll notice the C has come up and we're doing some fraction of the speed of light. And pretty much, once we get out of the solar system, speed up a bit more. Okay, you don't really see much happening. We're now going twice the speed of light. And there's, you know, no, nearly three times the speed of light. There's nothing happening. So I said to the kids, well, when are we going to see something happening? When are we going to reach something? When is something going to be near? Okay. So, I mean, at this sort of speed, it's going to be what? 14, 15 months sitting in front of this, waiting for something to look. That's assuming that we're heading in, you know, Alpha Centauri's direction. That's going to be a long and boring lesson. Okay. But you really do. You really do have to go at some wicked speed before this really starts to see anything. And I mean, I don't, you know, so what's this now? 10 times the speed of light. Then it flicks to astronomical units per second. I have no comprehension of what this means at all. The numbers are too great. And still we don't see anything. And we keep going and keep going. That's what's that now? Hundreds, thousands, we get up to thousands of astronomical units per second. Oh, and then it switches to light years per second. Who knows what that means? I mean, it's a massively big number. But still we don't see anything. And then eventually you get to this speed where the things on the edge of the screen start disappearing. And, you know, it actually looks like Star Trek. And of course, by then it's too late, because the thing that you saw has just gone past. It's now 87 zillion light years away. Okay, so that's Celestia. So that's one bit of software. Oh, stop us, we'd be doing this all the time. Okay, so that's Celestia. And it's on the CD that's in your pack. I mean, you can download all of this stuff free from the web, but it's on there as well. Right, VidShell, this is a motion analysis software. This is another piece of US software that a guy wrote that I thought was very good. I was sent two bits of software, commercial software, to review for the journal. And I didn't really like them. And I just wondered if somebody had written some stuff for free. And this guy had done this. Now, the nice thing about this is that you can import the movie clip, so you don't actually have to take the camera and film anything. It's got the movie clips already there, and you can just bring them in. Have any of you used VidShell? Huh? Very, very powerful. You can export all this stuff into spreadsheets and do loads of stuff with it. All you need to know is a distance. So for this one, you use the, you know, the size of the bike. Some of them, it's got a meter rule or something in. But that's a nice one. Quantum Atomica, this gives you nice 3D electron orbitals if you're looking at atoms. I quite like this one because it's really quite powerful. And it was developed in a school in the UK. And I went to a meeting and there's a guy from Imperial College in London, which has got a massive physics department, a surplus of £1 million a year, hugely successful. And this guy had never seen this, and he hadn't got anything like it in his, you know, huge physics department. He was really jealous. So that was quite good. Walter Wendt's applets. You must have seen these, yeah, yeah, really good. Physics lab, this is a sort of interactive little experiment thing. So you go through and do this virtual experiment. They're quite nice if you haven't got much in the way of kit. And this, one of the schools I was working on in, we were very strapped for equipment. So we did some of these experiments as well. There's about a dozen of them. Nice one with a skater on ice and you have to stop and hit the wall. FET, you must have seen these. I think these are excellent and getting better and better all the time. Now, Medellis is the one that we opened up before. Basically, with Medellis, you put some equations into a box, you make your mathematical model, and then it will go through and change the variables, and you can plot graphs, and you can do animations, and you can do loads and loads of stuff. It's a very good learning tool. It's sort of, if you've used the interactive physics software, this comes at it from the opposite direction. Rather than being able to easily create models that you've got no chance of putting the maths to, this comes in the other direction. I should have said the PowerPoint is on the disk as well, so all this stuff, information that's on the screen, is on the CD that you've got. FLIR, this is a nice one. This is astronomy, and that's an astronomy simulation. So with this one, you go to a little telescope, and the first thing you have to do, of course, you're inside the dome, and you've got control of the telescope, the first thing you have to do is open the observatory doors. All right, as you want to see anything, will you? So the first thing you have to do on this bit of software is you open the observatory doors, and they open up, and you see the stars, and then you move your telescope, you point it to a star, you take a spectrum, press the button, the photomultiplier clicks away, and then you collect your spectrum, and then you can go and compare your spectrum to some other star, and you do your spectral classification. There's about a dozen different similar things that they do. I think there's about three of them on the disk. This is a particle physics one. It's like a web-based thing. It's okay. It's not bad. But it's sort of, when they updated it recently, and basically they just updated the graphics and the way that it looked rather than actually the sort of teaching behind it. It's quite nice. We use this for quantum chromodynamics with our sixth formers, and I don't think you do that, do you? It's not that they're especially bright, but we use lots of Lego, so they like that. This is nice, seismology, bit of software. This has got, because we have to do this at key stage 4, which is our 14 to 16 year old. It's got this nice thing where there's an earthquake, and you see the S&P waves passing through, and then this one's got the volcanoes. So you start it with a sort of blank sheet, and all the volcanoes pop up, and it plays this horrible music while you're doing it. But you can see the edges of the plates, which is really great. Stellarium is a French bit of software. It's like a planetarium, so it's not like Celestia. You're sat on the Earth, and you can look at these different objects and zoom in on them. The only thing that makes it not so realistic is the fact that on some of the pictures it says, courtesy of Grasslands Observatory or stuff like that, which I'm guessing aren't there in the real thing. This is basically a tutorial to do with relativity. This is, again, to do with relativity, but this is what you would see if you were able to sort of travel at the speed of light and it be sort of slower, if you know what I mean. And then this is a nice one. WinTreb, have you seen this one? Yeah, it's a lovely one, this one. Unfortunately, they've taken it off the web now. And one of the reasons was because it's done by West Point, but I was talking to the guy, and they didn't want to offer any support for it. So they've taken it off the web, so you can't really get in touch with them about it, because then they don't want to know, but we've stuck it on our CD, and they didn't. And then this is another motion analysis software. It's very simple. But what we found was this will open just about anything. And it basically, you move the mouse to a point like a drop or something, you click the mouse and it records the position of the mouse. So you can actually track something, which is quite nice. This is a bit of sort of electronic software. It's far more complicated than most physics teachers would need it for. It's got all these chips in and stuff. But I like it because you can draw, very easily draw these, the circuit diagrams, and then you can export them into Word. And it's, you know, really nice and quick. These are a set of applets, really. These are sort of six, your top-end 18-year-olds. Don't dwell on them too much. And then this one is just nice for using in the classroom. And this shows you the spectrum, emission spectrum of an element. So you drop the menu down, and then you get this. You choose whatever element you like. And then you see you get the emission spectrum there. And then this one is good because I like polarization. So it shows an electromagnetic wave, and you can explain elliptical polarization and circular polarization and like. Okay, right, so that's the workshop. Well, it's one of the workshops, but we spend a little bit more time on the demonstrations and stuff like that. But you get the idea. This is another workshop. This is one called New Ideas. And basically, I've got this suitcase. Well, I've got two suitcases. I've got eight suitcases, in fact. And we've got this suitcase that's got 19 different bits of kit in. And they're all boxed up, and they get couriered around the UK to the different to the coordinators. And it arrives. They get a day's training on some of these things. And they can just set up and do the session. And most of the stuff, almost all of the stuff, is in there that they need to do it, whether it's with experienced teachers or with newly qualified teachers or even teacher training students. So I'm not going to do what we've just done and whiz through all the stuff, because there's 19 things and there's another suitcase as well. But the sort of thing that it's got in here, there's some really nice ideas. We have brought the stuff, but we couldn't get it to work because the camera won't work with the voltages and stuff. There was a fundamental mistake on my part in that, which I should have realised, because it's a theoretical institute. And I said, have you got a clamp and stand? And they said, what? And I should have picked that one up sooner, shouldn't I? I should have come prepared. But they've got some nice pencils. This is a sort of half a dozen quite good ideas all put together. If you're doing a visual spectrum, we've got lots of overhead projectors lying around that we don't use anymore. So basically, you stick a couple of bits of paper on the top of the overhead projector, make a slit, right, stick your prism up the top, and then you get this lovely, huge 2-metre rainbow. Now, what I like to do when I'm doing this is I've got this cast up on the wall. I get the kids to come up. If you imagine that it's sort of, so I get the kids to come up and stand with one eye and then slowly move their head right through the rainbow. Because what they'll see is they'll see the colours coming from the prism changing. Okay, so it's not that they're just looking at this pattern that arrives at the wall. They're actually looking back and seeing the light all the way through. Okay, so we do that. And then I get one of the kids to come up and put their finger right on the edge of the red part of the spectrum. Now, you can use various things for this, but what we've found is works best in the UK, doesn't work at all in Canada. But we use these little black and white security cameras. You get the kid to put their finger on the edge of the red, switch on your camera, you turn it around, and they'll see there's a stripe about 2 inches wide past their finger, okay? And it's the camera that picks up the infrared, because when you can do all this with a remote control, you flash your remote control into it and you can see it. You can do it with some webcams, but the reason this cheap camera works is because they don't put a filter in this to block the infrared, whereas apparently with more expensive cameras they do. So you can actually then point out this nice stripe of infrared. Now, the next thing we'll be doing is on top of the prism, on top of the overhead projector, I put this. This is infrared transmitting plastic. And I know it's infrared transmitting plastic because it had a label on it that said infrared transmitting plastic when I found it. And we had terrible trouble sourcing this. And then my partner's a CDT teacher. And I took this home and I said, have you got any infrared transmitting plastic stuff in any of your catalogues? And then she said, no, she said, but it looks like Perspex, which is sort of a trade name for some plastic. I don't know if it's the same over here. So of course I said, don't be stupid. Back in the kitchen, cook the tea. This is infrared transmitting plastic. It said so on the stuff. It was Perspex. You wouldn't have said it, would it? Anyway, the next day she brought home a piece of Perspex that looked surprisingly similar, you know, in every way, shape and form. And it is, in fact, just, you know, ordinary black Perspex. And if you put this in front of that camera, it just looks transparent. So we stick this then on top of the OHP, on top of the slip, so that all that's coming through this, because you can't see, so all that's coming through this is the infrared. There's no, you know, when you look with your naked eye, you won't see anything. There's no rainbow. As soon as we point the camera to it, all you can see is this nice big infrared stripe. You know? So we've actually taken something that normally isn't very real for the kids, and then they can see it. And it's not too expensive. I originally bought the camera because I was going to cheaply video my lessons, because I didn't want to die and nobody see how good I was. Right, and then another little idea we've got is bendy pencils. Do you get these? Yeah? You can use them as strain gauges. Okay, it's very, very simple. I mean, you can get these in different lengths. So we've got like 2 meter ones. They stretch apparently to 4 meters. But you just cut a couple of nicks out so that you can get to the graphite-y stuff inside. Clip on your resistance meter. And then when you stretch this, the resistance will change and you've got a strain gauge. Okay? Now, in actual fact, the big ones don't work as well because you need a good meter because it's got to have a high range. But you can do it with the little ones. I mean, these are what? These are 25 cents, I think, you buy these for. Okay? So, I mean, they're dirt cheap. And I think, if I'm not hugely mistaken, what? We ended up back there. Oh, gone the wrong way. Okay, so Daniel's got some of the bendy pencils for you to take away. Blah, 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 blah. It's like revision, isn't it? Okay, oh, okay, right. So that's just a couple of the ideas in one of the workshops. Right, and then the Sun of New Ideas. This has got some other... I mean, some of these ideas aren't really that sort of wow. Some of them are just sort of very good teaching things. Others are just, you know, cheap and useful. So this is something I really like. We do this stuff. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you're much better than I used to be. But I used to do this stuff where I'd tell the kids that, you know, sounds a longitudinal wave, and we do this and put something in their books and everything. And then, of course, every time after that, after me telling them the first time, every time we come across sound, I draw it on the board as a transverse wave, like you'd see on an oscilloscope. Right, even though I just told them it's not a transverse, it's a longitudinal wave. And then you sort of think, you know, one day I'm sort of thinking, why do they keep getting this wrong? And it's like, well, because when they go into the test, it's like, did he, this really good-looking, clever teacher, did he... tell me it was a longitudinal wave and then try to confuse me by drawing the transverse wave on the board every time after? Or maybe I've just got it wrong and it's a transverse wave anyway. And you can guess which one they're going to go for. So this is just a real simple bit of kit that we knocked up to try and get across the idea of what's happening when we draw the thing on the screen. So basically you get a slinky, not a slinky spring, and I mean I've got this fastened down with a couple of, actually they're coat hangers, but then you use these clamp stands, and then another clamp stand usually, and a meter stick. And this has got an elastic band or a bit of cable tie or something holding it in place. And then we've got a pen at the other end, and then what I do is I move this backwards and forwards, and I change the frequency and the amplitude and stuff like that. And then one of the kids pulls a piece of paper through as we're doing it, and what we get is, on this piece of paper, a transverse representation of what was happening in this longitudinal wave. Okay, and it's dead simple. You just whip it out every time you're going to stick this on the screen. And when you do it, the kids get it then, because they can see what's going on. Okay, but nobody else, well, certainly I didn't see it. So that's another nice little idea. Now, this one. You might want to move. Well, I suppose I could just use you as volunteers. Now, this is another nice little demonstration. I didn't have any beer. No. Just whiskey. This, if you did the bucket of water trick, you know, the bucket where you swing it, well, that's a nice trick. But what I prefer to do, especially like Easter time when we have these things called cream eggs, which these aren't, but they're similar. I like to do this. So this is a little egg boiler tray that you can buy from the supermarket for about a dollar. And you stick your eggs on it. Yeah, you might want them. You sure? Okay. Now the tricky bit with this isn't getting it going, okay? So it goes around. Okay? It's not getting it going. You're stopping it. Ah. Right. But if you've done, actually I'll take those off at the top of me. If you've done, it's all right, there we go. Or you're just gonna eat them. If you've done this circular motion thing with the kids, you'll know, this makes a lovely sound when it goes round. Right, you'll know if you ask them that question, you know, if I cut the string, what's going to happen? Or, you know, suddenly switch gravity off. If they're going to get it wrong, they're usually going to give you this answer whereby, you know, oh, it goes off, you know, in a radial path. Or it curves round for some reason. Okay, which is, you know, the ones that you don't want. So, the reason for doing this, oh, I should explain as well. If you're going to do this in the classroom, you put a bit of wire, right, to make sure this arm, if this is a folding arm, make sure it doesn't fold while you're doing this. I speak from experience. It doesn't at all go according to plan. In fact, what would be nice is if I could make it fold on command, because then I'd have exactly what I want, but it's too tricky to work out. So they have this problem with this radial path business when you've switched gravity off of your cook string. So what we do with this little demonstration, now, I need some volunteers. Who likes eggs? Who likes eggs? Three of you, come down there. One of the things when you're teaching, right, as I'm sure you'll know, that's very important is language. Do you want to stand over there? Okay. Yeah, just sit on those seats at the end. I'll just move the stuff out, I don't want to break. Okay, and you'll notice, it's very important, because you can say, as you'll probably know, you can say one word wrong, or one word different to a kid, and they either get the explanation, or they don't. Oh. No, they don't do that one, do that one. Okay. So, you'll notice then I said, who likes eggs? I didn't say, who likes cream eggs, or chocolate eggs, okay? Now, I'll put these back, I don't want to waste them. Now, the nice thing about this demonstration is that what we're going to do is we're going to sort of switch off before. You can't really do this with a bucket of water trick. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I've got a bit of foam down here, okay, and I'm going to swing the eggs. And then the eggs are going to come down, and as I'm swinging this, okay, I'm going to swing this stuff, right, okay, I'm going to lower it down, it's going to hit the foam, the tray will stop, but the eggs will carry on going, okay, so you said to the kid, so what's going to happen to the eggs, you know, you explain what's going to happen to the eggs, which is pretty obvious, the eggs are going to go flying forward, isn't it? Now they've just got the answer to the same problem as the one before, okay, so you've set up a bit of a conflict, you haven't got the same answer, and it's something that they need to sort out with their thinking. But they started off from a position of success rather than one of failure. You might want to stand up for this. Because there's glass behind you, you see? Okay, are we ready? Okay, now let's get it going. Okay, now. The rubber eggs are very useful, but unfortunately, they are a bit heavy. Now, some of these didn't quite, thank you very much, some of these didn't quite survive practice in, oh, thanks, that's fair, swap. Right, cheers, thanks. Okay, and then, okay, so it's a nice, simple little demonstration. And you don't need a noodle. I didn't know they were called noodles. until I brought this the other day and I was walking down the street. A number of people have said, look, he's got a noodle. So he says. Right, and then, as we've sort of seen, we've got a fair bit of sort of quantum mechanics and stuff like that in our syllabus. So, go back. So we do the photoelectric effect, and one of the problems with the photoelectric effect is, if you're doing, we've got a variety of practicals, but some of the practicals are a bit, you're not actually doing that much. You know, it's sort of like you twiddle a knob and something changes over here, and you know, allegedly the photoelectric effect is going on inside the box. But I mean, it could be, you know, a little dwarf, you know, turning something. So to sort of get this fixed in the kids' minds, we've got this little demonstration for explaining photoelectricity. And I need a volunteer. So he's laughing. Okay. Probably not, but I haven't seen a shirt that I'll go with yet anyway. Okay. So basically, have you seen this butthead game? Right. The idea is you're supposed to play this while you're drunk. It doesn't make any difference. It's just sort of you laugh more. Okay, so no, up here will be fine. Okay, so the hat's got Velcro strips on. Okay, and these fluffy balls are electrons. Well, they're not, obviously, they're fluffy balls, but they're pretending to be electrons bound in, okay, to the atom. Okay, and the Velcro providing the binding. Okay, now. Okay. Now, I've got goggles if you want them. But I think you'll survive. I think you'll survive. Okay, so they've got this photoelectric effect, and we need some photons. So this is my photon, it's my laser. Okay. Now, you can buy different versions of these guns. I like this one, it's just got that sort of feel about it. What you have to look for is when you buy these, they usually come with just red and blue, and that's no good because it's not much of a demonstration. So you need to find some coloured foam so you can have some different coloured photons. Okay, so what we do, it's going to test your physics now.
Oh, water.
Not yet, no. Okay, no, it's just photons. Okay, so we fire some photons, okay? Red photons, they're no good because they haven't got enough energy, okay? So we can start talking about E equals HF, okay? But the red photons have got no energy. This shouldn't hurt even if it hits you in the eye, apart from the one the drawing pin in. Okay, all right? Red photons, no good. Okay, so we need to increase the frequency. That means a change of colour. Oh, sorry. Okay, so that's a yellow one. Okay, but that was a bit more energetic, but it still didn't do the job. Okay, another yellow one. Green one, still no good, not enough energy. No, not yet. Don't you know about the photoelectric effect? Okay. Blue ones, it's no good. All right, the blue ones still haven't got... I did have a violet one, but I lost it. What we need is something that fires photons that we can't see. You know, something ultraviolet. Now, because I'm travelling, I've only got a little. Okay, what you'll have seen is bigger versions. Okay, now, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, because this is a big finale. Okay, now, with the big one, you really can do this. Okay, you can get this just positioned so that the air zooka will actually knock it off. Okay, but you have to be really, really good at this to use a little one and get the ball to knock off. Okay, really good. Took me hours of practice. Okay, so, ready? There you go, okay? And you see it flying off there, and you can talk about the kinetic energy that it's got and the work function, the amount of energy that it took to release it, okay? Now, the nice thing is with this, this has absolutely no educational value at all, but if you've got a smoke machine or some smoke, you can fill your air zooka with it, and you fire the stuff out, and you'll see a nice donut shape, proving that it is a photon, because it's the same shape as the other one. Okay. Right, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Right, that's it. Thank you very much. So.